Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Political scandals, they happen, but they seem to happen frequently here in the Tar Heel State. The scandal du jour, of course, surrounds Lieutenant Governor and gubernatorial candidate Mark Robinson. He's involved in a scandal that would have ended the political careers of politicians just a few short years ago, but today, he's still in the race. Then there are other well-known black marks on political careers involving the likes of John Edwards, Madison Cawthorn, Mark Harris, Jim Black, Patrick Cannon, and others. It's just the tip of the iceberg. Is there something about this state that encourages political figures to take these kinds of risks, or do we fit in with every other part of the country? What impact do these scandals have on candidates, on political parties, on how we vote, on how we are governed, and is that impact changing in the modern era? We're examining that this hour with longtime but now retired political reporter for the Charlotte Observer, Jim Morrill. Michael Bitzer is professor of politics and history and chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College. And Colin Campbell is Capitol Bureau Chief at WUNC. Welcome to you all. Good morning. Welcome back.
Great to be here.
Good to be here.
So, Michael, on your blog, Old North State Politics, you recently published this list of political scandals and corruption cases in North Carolina. I counted 26, and you called that a preliminary list. Some of those scandals are more serious than others. 26 sounds like a lot in just over the last couple of decades, is it?
I mean, I think it's normal. I think all states tend to have the dynamics of corrupt human behavior. And when you're dealing with human behavior, you're going to get this kind of scandalous corruption that, you know, that does plague our politics just as much as it plagues a lot of our societal groups and entities. But politics certainly, you know, when you're dealing with the public trust, and you're dealing with elected officials, people who are supposed to hold the public's trust in their service as a public servant, these kinds of scandals and human behavior call into question, I think, in a lot of voters' minds, what these people are doing.
Axios reports that North Carolina has been, quote, plagued by a stream of jaw-dropping political scandals unrivaled by virtually any other state in the country. Could that be true from what you know about this, Bitzer, Michael Bitzer?
I'm not sure. I mean, certainly we have had our fair share, and certainly we have gotten national attention. The most recent one, the lieutenant governor, I mean, that just blew up, and what I described as a political asteroid hit this particular state. But, you know, states are not immune from political issues, political scandals, political corruption. When I was in South Carolina, we had a huge bribery scandal that hit the legislature in ways that we thought, okay, this may be a new day in South Carolina politics. Well, we continue to have scandals there as well. So I think, you know, certainly North Carolina has had more than its fair share, but we are not the, let's say, exemplar of political scandals of the 50 states.
Colin, you're sitting there in Raleigh or nearby Raleigh, and you go to Jones Street a lot, and the lieutenant governor's name has already been invoked, and when we invoke it now, people think of the scandals that CNN reported on, which we'll touch on later in the program. But yesterday, WRAL Television released some news showing that North Carolina lieutenant governor and Republican nominee for governor, Mark Robinson, did not vote on an emergency declaration that would have allowed Governor Cooper to activate resources needed for the Hurricane Helene rescue and recovery efforts. In the days leading up to Hurricane Helene's impacts, the governor sought approval from the nine members of the executive branch, I guess, what are they called? They are called
Council of State,
to activate additional state resources. And according to WRAL, within hours of the request, all of the executive branch members responded, except for Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. Is that a scandal? Is that an additional scandal involving him?
You know, I think it sort of harms his attempt to pivot from the CNN-related scandal. He spent the last few days since the hurricane hit Western North Carolina up there posting videos and photos of himself, doing supply drives to different areas, working with law enforcement, sort of an attempt to look like governor material on a really serious disaster for this state. And the fact that he didn't do the one thing that the lieutenant governor is expected to do, which is essentially reply to an email and say, yes, I support a state of emergency with this thing coming. Now, he says that his no response vote was ultimately counted as a yes vote, so it doesn't really matter, and he's focused on more important things. But of course, this state of emergency declaration occurred before the storm hit, before there was any damage to respond to. So I think this sort of plays into this concern about his attendance on a variety of other state government roles he has, boards he sits on. He very rarely goes to the state Senate to preside as the president of the Senate, which is one thing the lieutenant governor does. So it just sort of reinforces some of the concerns that folks have had with him, really dating back to when he ran for lieutenant governor 4 years ago. A lot of the comments and stuff that he said on Facebook and other places came to light then. And it's just sort of been mounting towards this sort of mega scandal that hit with the CNN story.
Jim Morrill, you've covered politics for, I think, about four decades. You're not that old, but I'm just going to say four decades for the Charlotte Observer. More than a few on Michael Bitzer's list involved people and politicians in Charlotte, including the former Speaker of the North Carolina State House, the former Charlotte Mayor. Are we lucky to have contributed just a few people to this list, or unlucky to have any at all on the list?
You know, I can remember back when I started doing this stuff in the 80s, mid-80s, you know, there was still sort of an image of North Carolina and Charlotte, for sure, of good government and scandal-free. I think you remember that, too. And so the list that Dr. Bitzer has is sort of a rogues gallery of people. And, you know, I think that, you know, the Patrick Cannon stuff was really the biggest scandal in Charlotte that I remember. And, you know, I think that the scandals in North Carolina that you referenced, you know, were national stories. A lot of them were national. John Edwards, Jim Black, the speaker, and then the Ninth District vote tampering scandal of 2018 got national attention.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of the scandals here have been really high profile and gotten national attention.
Colin, I know that when I was in South Carolina and working for a television network that was paid completely by the state government, we had our ear to the ground with regard to what was going on in Columbia in the legislature. And we knew things probably, or we heard things that the average person probably didn't hear, but we didn't have the resources to confirm or deny. You're on Jones Street, right, reporting from the legislature. From your experience and from what you hear with your ear to the ground, do you think that things are worse than we know because we just don't hear about it all, that these things are just the tip of the iceberg?
Yeah. You know, I think there's always rumors going around about this politician or that politician has done something. We have a lot of minor scandals, things that maybe generate a couple of news stories about someone, but maybe don't even rise to the level to be on the list that Dr. Bitzer compiled of sort of the big, well-known historical scandals here. I think part of the challenge for North Carolina is, you know, we've got a limited press resources. The press corps in Raleigh has shrunk over the years as newspapers have contracted. There's just fewer resources to get to things, to the extent that I think North Carolina gets more attention for these things as we have so many high profile campaigns that have national significance. We're a swing state. And so the opposition research folks in different campaigns are probably more active here than they are in other states in getting some of the stuff out, digging up some of the things that we as reporters don't necessarily have time to do on our own, but provided, you know, a few helpful tips and hints of where to look and what may be going on. These things can become headline news, and oftentimes, as we know, they do, and end up being either news within the state or, as we've seen recently, national and international news, just because of the implications of electoral politics from what some of these elected officials and politicians and candidates are accused of doing.
So, Michael, on the list on your blog, Mark Robinson leads that list because I guess he's the most recent scandal and most well known at the moment. But you have some lesser known names, even some names that we did used to think about a lot, but have faded away into the mists of time, like Greg Lindbergh, Robin Hayes, Meg Scott Phipps, Rufus Edmiston, the Wake County Register of Deeds, whose name I don't know, even the long ago Mecklenburg County Election Board Director Bill Culp, who I did know. And thought he was a good guy until he wasn't. but of those and the ones that I didn't mention, which do you think are the most serious infractions?
Well, I mean, I think there's the personal scandals and then there's the institutional scandals. And for a lot of these are personal scandals. I would probably rank the North Carolina ninth that Jim mentioned as election fraud as a serious scandal that wasn't just personal, but it was about the manipulation of a fundamental right of North Carolinians to cast their ballots. I think when you're talking about things like the Jim Black scandal, the former Speaker of the North Carolina State House, who wanted to stay in power and basically, you know, gave money to a legislator to then flip his vote, create a tie that then created an ability for Black to continue in his role as Speaker. I think that those are issues, you know, when you're talking about governmental operations, when you're talking about public policy, when you're talking about the impact on basic citizens for the government, and when we entrust public servants with that trust. You know, it's one thing to have a sex scandal or, you know, some kind of issue of that. But when you're dealing with government and the operations of government, I think that that, in my mind, tends to be a higher threshold and severity of a scandal issue.
And Jim, we've been talking now since, I guess, Donald Trump came down the escalator about the integrity of our elections. People are very concerned about that, and they should be about the. Although all things point to the fact that our elections have integrity, but both of us knew Mecklenburg County Elections Director Bill Culp, who was the elections director in the 80s, 90s, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Long time.
He did conduct fair elections. He seemed to be every bit the dedicated public servant back in the late 90s. However, he pleaded guilty to accepting bribes and kickbacks from a voting machine vendor. He went to prison. But did those bribes affect the outcome or the vote totals in any of our elections? And what impact did it have on confidence in our elections back then?
You know, I don't think there's any evidence that it had any effect on elections. And I don't think there was even any talk about that, really. And I don't think that had an impact on confidence in local elections, at least as far as I know and remember. You know, he did. I mean, that was the first scandal, sort of local scandal in Mecklenburg County that I remember, you know, because as you said, Bill Culp was he was in the news a lot. He was quoted a lot by us and other people. And so it was really a surprise. But I don't think it really had a material effect on elections.
Michael, we're going to move on from your list, but you did, when you posted that list on your blog, you said this is a preliminary list, and you asked your readers if they could come up with any names that should be on that list, they should email you, and you'll put them on the list. What response did you get in 30 seconds or less?
I had neglected to put the Cal Cunningham personal scandal in October of 2020. I don't know how I missed that, but I did. It is now on the list.
Okay. Well, actually, because it is on the list, it brought him back to my memory. I'd completely forgotten about him.
See, I'm not
going so quickly.
And we will talk about that and more when we come back. Scandals in politics in North Carolina and elsewhere and their impact on us. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFHE in Hickory. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Jim Morrill, who's a former political reporter for the Charlotte Observer, covered politics and politicians for 40 years. Dr. Michael Bitzer is, well, give or take. Dr. Michael Bitzer is also with us. He is the professor of politics and history and chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College. And Colin Campbell is Capitol Bureau Chief for WUNC. Jim, in your mind, we've been talking about these scandals, and it's come up in the conversation already that some things are scandals and some things, well, are they scandals? So how would you define what is a scandal, a political scandal, and has the definition of political scandal changed over the years?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that it's changed. I think there, like Dr. Bitzer said, I think there are scandals that involve public, you know, the public well-being, public policy, like Patrick Cannon, the mayor of Charlotte, former mayor of Charlotte, taking bribes in his office. Jim Black, the former speaker of the House, taking campaign contributions, illegal contributions from ophthalmologists. He was an optometrist. He was an optometrist. Things like that. Then there are the personal scandals, like John Edwards and certainly the lieutenant governor now. And you know, I think those have risen to tabloid news. You know, it was the National Enquirer, after all, that first sort of exposed the John Edwards situation back in 2007. And I think the Mark Robinson news has also made tabloid news around the world, frankly. You know, so I think it's elevated, you know, with the media landscape these days, and I think things get picked up and go viral and get in the bloodstream like that.
The allegations against the lieutenant governor in my lifetime would have been disqualifying instantly. He would have been out of the race instantly. He would have been condemned by everybody in his political party instantly. One thing that has changed in all of this is that shame is gone. It has disappeared. At least it's taken a backseat to politics, Colin. Things that we find scandalous apparently are no longer disqualifying. Is that a good or a bad thing?
Yeah, I think that's the sort of the challenge in today's politics is that, you know, there's this unwillingness to go against a popular political figure in your party, as Mark Robinson was within the Republican Party going into this. So the Republicans have sort of done this dance of suggesting, well, if these allegations are true, then this is disqualifying, we should not support him. But they don't go as far as to say, well, do they think it was true? Do they think that's the case? And so you've got a lot of distrust out there. So what I see from Robinson's core supporters is, well, we just don't believe that this is true. And he's denying that, you know, the allegations of the CNN reporter, actually the comments were made by him. He says they were not. He says he's getting a law firm. He's going to potentially take legal action. So I think some of that allows you to sort of push these scandals aside and still have some level of support. On the flip side to that, there are plenty of candidates who sort of go down in flames as a result of that. I mean, I think most recently, State Auditor Beth Wood, who crashed her car after drinking at a Christmas party, got charged with misuse of state vehicles. Democrats pushed her out. They pushed her to resign. They pushed her not to run for re-election. So in some cases, there is some level of accountability here. In other cases, people just aren't willing to go that far and push a particular offending person out of their party and out of state government.
Michael, this may not be true, but it is my perception that when a scandal happens within the Democratic Party, the Democrats usually push out the alleged evildoer almost instantly, and Republicans have kind of fought against doing that in recent months. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Are we better off or worse off? Because some of these allegations may prove to be untrue. So should somebody resign? Should you be considered caught up in scandal just because somebody alleges something?
That's a great and very personal question. What I mean by that is the individual has to either accept responsibility, acknowledge it, you know, say that indeed this is something that is happening, or can fight it. I'm not sure that there's any guidance necessarily other than one's own personal moral standards by which, you know, you hold yourself accountable. You know what you did, And if you choose to fight it, even if you did it, you're making a statement in that regard. So I think, you know, certainly good government requires good people in it. And when we don't have that, we get the kind of government that people are suspicious of.
Yeah. Some of these scandals, Jim, as we go through the litany of scandals that we have endured, are serious in terms of their potential impact on the ability of a person in office to do their job effectively, and maybe even were connected to doing that job or keeping that job. Some of them are not connected to what their official duties, and everybody is a human being. All of these people are human beings. They all have foibles. Do we expect too much of people? Do we expect these people, because they run for office, to be Boy Scouts? Is that fair?
I don't think we necessarily expect them to be Boy Scouts, but I think character is important, you know, and I think a lot of these scandals involve character, and some of them are less important. Maybe there's I saw on the list there were a couple staffers in the legislature who had maybe inappropriate affairs with a lobbyist or something like that. And that's sort of human nature. But I think some of these tell a lot more about character, you know, John Edwards stuff, where he was having an affair with a woman that he put on his staff and had a child out of wedlock with her. I still think character is important. And I think that the rules may have changed a little bit. And I think part of this goes to polarization. And if you go back to the Access Hollywood tape a few years ago, that was a scandal, the kind of scandal that would have sunk a lot of people, but it didn't sink the former president.
Yeah, well, do voters care about character anymore? And if they don't, what does that portend?
They care about character in their partisan lenses, and the influence and impact and strength of partisan affiliation tends to put people into loyalist camps and tribalism. And when a particular candidate or elected official is attacked by scandal, there tends to be, I'm going to rally around my guy or gal, and you can't convince me that they did wrong. And it is partly human behavior. It's a whole lot of human psychology, which is well outside my bounds of expertise. But the partisanship and the polarization that this state and this country is experiencing tends to help us blanket and silo our, you know, lenses and the way we look at things in very distinctive manners.
I think to the character question, you know, I think ultimately at the end of the day, voters do take that into account. I mean, you look at the polls now, it looks like Mark Robinson, if the polls are accurate, is headed towards the biggest electoral defeat in a governor's race, perhaps since Jim Hunt, you know, won re-election in the early 1980s. Some of the other folks mentioned on this list, State Auditor Beth Wood, Congressman Madison Cawthorn, they're no longer in elected roles in large part, I think, because of these scandals. And then the folks in North Carolina politics who've had the longest tenure, largely scandal-free, whether that's Governor Roy Cooper, Senate Leader Phil Berger on the Republican side, they've managed to stick around for a long time in their powerful roles, in part because they've avoided these kind of either personal or ethical scandals.
Well, Jim, that leads me to this question, because you've covered politics and politicians for a long time, and you knew a lot of these people and got to know them personally, as opposed to just seeing them from afar, like most of us do. Every barrel has some bad apples in it. So from your experience, what do you think sets apart those who are scandal-free and those who succumb to doing things that get them in trouble?
Well, you know, ambition always contributes to people getting in trouble. I mean, look at Jim Black, the former speaker, for example. He was a good legislator, an influential legislator, and, you know, he began taking campaign contributions. I know in the 90s, we looked at some of his campaign money and he got blank checks. He asked his fellow optometrist for blank checks. And I think that was a slippery slope. And, you know, the more he did that, the more he had hung on to power and got power and wanted to keep power. And so things sort of cascaded from there.
Go ahead.
You know, I just think some people can resist stuff like that more than other people can.
You retired from regular reporting a couple of years ago, and the newspaper industry was just beginning its decline then because of digital incursion. And you mentioned that when you started, I think in an article in Charlotte Magazine, they interviewed you when you were retired, or shortly after you retired, and you said that when you started reporting on politics, the Observer had several reporters at the legislature in Raleigh, and that the press room in that legislative building had reporters from large and small newspapers all over the state. And you say that now none of those papers are there on a daily basis. You have fewer people covering government. Do you believe that this is going to lead to more scandals? I mean, the media, as evil as it may be to some politicians, is the watchdog in all of this. So if we're not there to see what's going on, is most of this stuff going to fly under the radar and go unreported?
Yeah, unpunished? Certainly. I think Colin referenced the shrinking media corps, the press corps in Raleigh, the Capitol press corps, you know, it's true. I mean, you just don't have that many people looking at things. And when people aren't looking, things happen. You know, I mean, the media, for all the criticism, is a watchdog and has performed that role and finds things out and digs in. We still have some good investigative reporters in North Carolina, the Raleigh paper and the Charlotte paper and WUNC and other places. And a lot of new publication sites like the Asheville Watchdog have popped up, you know, which look into things. And so to that extent, they'll keep people honest.
Well, Colin, you're there with WUNC. WRAL is clearly there, TV, because it's one of the biggest TV stations in the state. Are you folks able to fill the vacuum created by the disappearance of some of these big and small papers being there on a daily basis?
You know, I've seen sort of in the 10 years I've covered the building and the legislature, slight increase from sort of the low point where newspapers were having a lot of layoffs. So there are more of these other outlets, whether it's North Carolina Health News, Education North Carolina, Public Radio has expanded its group of reporters covering politics. There's been improvements, but in terms of sheer numbers, you just don't have the 6 or 7 person, you know, daily newspaper political team that Jim referenced was once the case of the Charlotte Observer. You've also got a lot more youth and turnover. When I started covering politics about a decade ago, I was the youngest person in that press room, looking up to folks like Jim and Rob Christensen at the News and Observer and other folks that I was working alongside. Those folks have sort of retired or stepped back. Now I'm 37 years old. I'm probably one of the more senior people in the press corps in North Carolina. And so some of that institutional knowledge of how things work, who the key players are, is important to sort of have the basis to dig into some of these stuff that could be burgeoning scandals. Should a reporter have a couple of weeks of time to dig in and look at the records and figure it all out?
Michael, I think it was Colin who mentioned that Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson is likely to have, or suffer, maybe it was you, suffer the most serious defeat in a gubernatorial contest since Jim Hunt. He said some incredibly controversial and some often repugnant things in the course of his being in office and running for office and now running for the governor. He's posted those comments on social media. He's made them in front of crowds at churches where he said some people should be killed, need to be killed. But then along comes this scandal where he allegedly posts on a nude Africa pornographic website, and that seems to be the thing that does him in. Why didn't the previous comments do him in? Because that made him popular. What's the difference in those comments, which were repugnant to many people, and the repugnancy of making some of the comments that he made allegedly on this porn site? What's the difference?
In terms of the rhetoric, there really is no difference. But I think what we have become numb to in our culture, in our society, oftentimes, again, through partisan lenses, is a sense of, well, he was speaking off the cuff, or he really didn't mean it, or, you know, he was joking around. You're taking it out of context. You know, when you call into question historical events like the Holocaust, when you stand in a church pulpit and declare that some people need killing, And that doesn't have any, you know, that creates the outcry, that creates, you know, the scandal. But it's oftentimes the outcry is from one side of the political aisle and the other side is either moot or saying, well, you're just attacking my guy again for, you know, his free speech. It's a weird, twisted world that we live in. And I'm not sure I necessarily have all the answers to his behavior.
His fellow Republican, Michelle Morrow, who is running for superintendent of public construction in North Carolina, has said things like President Obama should be lined up in front of a firing squad on pay-per-view. She said that the public schools are indoctrination centers and more. That she's in the running. Why isn't that scandalous?
It is. And this is where we are. I mean, you know, I'm sorry to sound like a broken record, but, you know, if you've got an R or a D behind your name, you're going to have that base of support.
Well, it begs the question,
Michael, is it enough to get elected? I don't know.
Then it begs the question, what's wrong with the Republicans?
The way that I look at the modern North Carolina Republican Party, it is the Trump Republican Party. And when you have the de facto leader of the Republican Party as someone who has questionable behavior from the past, I'm trying to be diplomatic here, that is going to filter down to the candidates that run because they see the leader being able to get away with it. They then have the power to say, you know what? I can do just as much as Trump has done and still have a base of support.
So Mike, can I just say that it was a conservative media outlet in North Carolina that first outed some of these personal business dealings of Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. His family, his wife is involved in some businesses and he's involved. And it was a conservative media outlet. Colin, remind me of the name.
Yeah, the Daily Haymaker is basically a blog that sunk its teeth into this issue involving a nonprofit that his wife and family were involved in.
And the Assembly later picked up on that, too.
We're going to move on to other things, but I do want to pick up on this on the other side of the break. If every allocation, if every misdeed is forgivable, what does that mean for democracy? We'll try to get an answer to that question when we come back after the break, including some conversation about some other folks who have been involved in these scandals and what the impact of those over time has been. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about scandals, political scandals, and their impact with Jim Morrill, former political reporter for the Charlotte Observer, Colin Campbell, Capitol Bureau Chief at WUNC, and Dr. Michael Bitzer, Professor of Politics and History at Catawba College. If we live in an era where at least one side of the political aisle views any scandal, any misdeed, any allegation of misdeed, no matter how heinous it seems to be, as okay, they can still be in office. They can still run for office. Doesn't matter as long as they're red or blue. What does that mean for democracy, Dr. Bitzer?
Falls into question whether not just our candidates have principles, have standards, but whether the voters are willing to impose those principles and standards on our elected officials and turn out folks that even if they have the same partisan label as the voter, if they commit wrongdoing, if they engage in some of these serious moral lapses, personal issues, do they deserve the public's trust in holding public office? I'm more and more questioning that now, so I'm not sure that I necessarily have the right answer.
Colin, you say, because you've texted me here or you've messaged me, that one thread that you think might be worth hitting is that sex seems to be the line over which you cannot cross and be successful. And you referenced, of course, Mark Robinson, who allegedly posted some very heinous comments on a pornographic website. Had he posted them elsewhere, they probably would have gone unnoticed. And Madison Cawthorn, who alleged he was invited to orgies by other members of Congress. I don't know whether that was ever proven, but he alleged that. What is it about sex that seems to be the line you cannot cross?
I think there's still that sort of conservative social thread, particularly in the Republican Party, to where there's a willingness to tolerate some messaging that is perceived as racist, anti-Semitic, things like that. But when someone like Mark Robinson sort of undercuts their moral high ground image, I mean, I think the thing that really stuck out in the recent CNN report was that a guy who has made speeches equating transgender individuals to filth, saying it shouldn't be in schools, is then on a pornographic website suggesting he likes watching videos that involve people who are transgender. So it sort of really undercuts the image in the Republican Party. So I think that seems to be swaying people in ways that a lot of his other things aren't. With Madison Cawthorn, you know, he was saying a lot of offensive comments. He was getting in trouble with the law. At the end of the day, there were some leaked videos of a sexual nature, which I will not describe here, that I think was sort of the nail in the coffin for his political career. It seems to be that more so than other things. I guess we're still a very puritanical society in some ways, yeah, where that seems to be the final straw for some folks.
And it's also the final straw, evidently, Jim, for Democrats, in particular when it comes to people like John Edwards. Senator Edwards ran for president in 2008. You've already referenced this. He had a mistress. He got her pregnant. He tried to cover it up. Which was the offense that did him in? The fact that he had this dalliance or the fact that he tried to cover it up?
Well, good question. I think they both played a role in it, you know, because it was a very high profile thing. He was a vice presidential nominee, don't forget. So when this happened to him, you know, and it went against everything that he portrayed himself as, you know, the family man. And then his wife had cancer on top of everything else. And so I think they sort of went hand in glove. And I just want to say, relative to what y'all were talking about a minute ago, some people have more Teflon than others. You know, Donald Trump has had a lot of accusations thrown at him and thrown some at himself with the Access Hollywood things and some of the court cases. But it hasn't appeared to hurt him with a lot of people. Whereas Mark Robinson's situation, you know, the polls are right. He's thinking like a stone. Cal Cunningham, a Democrat who ran for the Senate a couple of years ago, it hurt him, especially among independent voters. So I think some people are more immune to it than others.
Colin, the election fraud scandal in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District a couple of years ago involved a political apparatchik, the late McCray Dowless, who had worked for both parties, but in 2018 he was working on behalf of the Mark Harris campaign. Mark Harris was running for Congress, former Baptist minister, still a Baptist minister. The result of that first election was thrown out because of all of this, and then the candidate, Mark Harris, withdrew his nomination or his name from the race and moved on. But now he is running again, alleging that he was railroaded in that first contest. Has that previous black mark, I mean, his son testified against him, saying that he told his father that McCray Dowless was essentially crooked and his father paid no attention. Has that black mark been removed? Does that mean that voters feel that he has been rehabilitated or that what happened simply didn't matter?
I think at least has rehabilitated him among Republican primary voters in that congressional district who either forgot about the scandal from a few years ago or just simply didn't believe what Harris was accused of doing in reference to that election fraud that occurred down in eastern North Carolina. So now he is essentially, he's in a district that's drawn to be heavily favored to Republicans after winning a contested primary that had multiple candidates who were also trying to bring him down over that and keep him out of that seat. He's pretty much guaranteed a seat in Congress next year, despite that scandal. And it's largely because of the whatever percentage of Republican primary voters last spring that decided they didn't care or they didn't know about it.
Michael, a few years ago, the former congressman and former chair of the North Carolina GOP, Robin Hayes, pled guilty to a political bribery scandal, which took down several other figures as well. prior to that, as we've already mentioned, the former Speaker of the North Carolina House, Jim Black, a Democrat, was swept up in a similar scandal involving cash payoffs. He served time in federal prison. He got out, insisted he had done nothing wrong. Hayes did not serve time. He got, I think, supervised probation. Does that reflect a difference in the charges or the crimes alleged, or simply changing times? We just don't take things that seriously anymore.
I would probably have to defer to others that prosecuted both cases. I don't know the intricacies of what the pleadings were like, the deal that was cut in terms of the dynamics there. But it is certainly, you know, as we're kind of hitting around the bases here, this is a bipartisan dynamic because it's human nature. And, you know, the punishments may not always necessarily fit the crimes for a lot of people in terms of what they perceive the seriousness of these issues. But there are other scandals that, you know, do take people out of public office, that do force them out, and that, you know, there is some, you know, consequences to these behaviors.
Mike, well, I think one aspect of this, too, is that, you know, North Carolina is a much more closely divided state now, and that, you know, a lot of this is the stakes are power, you know. And so to what extent is one political party or one or two politicians willing to go to grab more political power? You saw it in Jim Black. And, you know, I think you see it in efforts to take back the legislature.
Well, you know, you mentioned, Jim, that for the longest time we had this reputation, or thought we had this reputation, of having really clean government in North Carolina, particularly in Charlotte. And then along comes Democrat Patrick Cannon, who was caught taking bribes in his office, I believe, by the FBI, and hauled out in handcuffs on television. That was a deep, deep shock to Charlottesians. I guess the question is, should we be happy that it was only one person that this happened to over the course of time, and that we actually do have good people in most of these offices most of the time? I guess that's the question. Should we be happy about this, that it was only once?
Yeah, you know, I think we probably should. You know, I mean, when I think about Charlotte and political scandals like that, you know, Patrick Cannon was one, and Bill Culp was another one, but they were separated by a decade or more, and knock on wood, there haven't been any other scandals like that since then.
Colin, as somebody who go ahead, Michael, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you want a state of scandals, just try Illinois and their governors.
Or New York.
Or New York. Exactly.
Well, that's true. I was going to talk about that later. As a follower, Colin, of politics, how do you think these scandals impact the voters? How do you think it impacts our regard for, our trust in government and the people that we elect to govern us? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge in particularly state politics with these scandals is, to what extent are the average voters paying attention, are aware of these things? I mean, there's been all these sort of mini scandals that have plagued North Carolina House Speaker Tim Moore. There was a situation where he was getting sued by someone who he accusing him of essentially stealing his wife and having an affair. That did not have any legs. I think where you're seeing things really land is where there is a contested election like the governor's race this year, and it's filtering into political ads that people who aren't necessarily, you know, listening to the great public radio stations we have in the state or reading our newspapers may not be aware of, but now they're seeing political ad after political ad about things that Mark Robinson has said, and you see the polls reflect that. So I think a lot of times, you know, we're sort of faced with the challenges of the nationalization of our political dialogue. People are so focused on what's happening in DC and not paying attention and getting as much information about things involving their local and state officials who may have just as many ethical lapses as we see among members of Congress and folks in national politics.
Michael, I'm old, and I don't know whether it's because I was raised at a time when we just assumed that America was the good guy and everybody running us wore a white hat. I don't know whether it was the 8 years of Catholic education that I went through. I don't know whether it was my parents who instilled a certain set of values that will never, ever, 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 ever go away. But I look at politics and these scandals today, and my brain is going to break because I just don't get it. John Edwards was taken down by a sex scandal. Around the same time, as we've already mentioned, North Carolina Democratic Senate candidate Cal Cunningham was caught sexting with someone other than his wife. That ended his career, essentially. He lost his race to Tom Tillis. Bill Clinton was impeached because of a sex scandal. But now, the Republican frontrunner, who is famous for having told Billy Bush on Entertainment Tonight that when you're famous, you can grab women by their private parts and get away with it because you're famous, who is also an adjudicated rapist, has been convicted of 34 felonies, has been indicted for more, but because he's rich, he's been able to delay these trials in perpetuity, it seems, and he may win this contest. He may be the next president of the United States. Is there now anything that any politician can do that would be disqualifying?
Probably not, but it is, again, up to the voters, who I would hope would take on your parents' mantra and standards that they set for you, and to convey to the American voter, and particularly North Carolina voter, is this who you want? Is this the representation you want in public office? If it is, it says more about us as voters than it does as much as the candidates.
And yet, Jim, some of these people are just accused. They are not convicted. They are simply accused. And in America, you are innocent until proven guilty. Some people have called for Mark Robinson, for instance, to resign. But should he? Should anybody who's simply facing allegations do that? Bob Menendez in New York was accused of many things, ultimately convicted, I think, if I'm not mistaken, but he was asked to resign. He refused to do so. Should we make those people resign, or should they be in office until they are proven guilty?
Well, I don't think you can make them resign. I mean, people are still innocent until proven guilty here. I mean, that's the American way. And no matter the preponderance of the evidence, they still have that, you know, going for them. So, you know, when the accusations just get enough to sort of cascade down, as we're seeing maybe with the Lieutenant Governor Robinson, you know, different story, but the election is soon.
You know, it's difficult today to get away with petty crimes because of DNA and because of cameras being everywhere. It's difficult if you're a robber to get away with it ultimately. Politicians are public people living in the 21st century, and where media and social media is documenting everything. There are cameras and microphones everywhere all the time. What is it, Michael, that makes these people believe that they can get away with this and not be caught?
That's human psychology, and I am not an expert in that field, so I will take myself out of answering that question, other than their willingness to suspend reality.
There's definitely a threat in politics of people just sort of feeling invincible because they are surrounded by people who are essentially functioning as yes men, yes women, telling them that they're great, telling them they're doing a good job, not criticizing them at all. And so they feel sort of compelled to take these additional risks that are potentially to sink their critical career, or at the very least get them some negative press. And they do it anyway because they're just the ego just gets so big.
Because of the rapidly speeding up news cycle, it may seem, Jim, that we are living in scandal-ridden, scandal-plagued times. Are we, or is it just being reported on more often?
You know, it's probably being reported on more often, and some of these things rise to the level of tabloid journalism and tabloid stuff, like we've seen with John Edwards and Mark Robinson. You know, people read that stuff and look at that stuff, and because there are so many cameras out there and recordings, that this stuff is it's viral. Everything goes viral now.
So I have 30 seconds left. Where do you see this going in the modern era? Are things going to get worse, or have we reached the nadir? Are we going to bounce back from this and have new old standards reapplied. Very quickly, what do you think? Michael?
Yes.
Jim?
We have not reached the nadir.
Okay. Colin?
I think it's only going to get worse. I hate to say it.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for the words of... Michael, thank you for being on the show. The rest of you can go away now. Dr. Michael Bitzer from Catawba College, Colin Campbell from WUNC, and Jim Morrill, formerly with the Charlotte Observer. Thank you all.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.